Blog Talk Radio.
Company with poetry. I hope everyone's having a great week so far, and I hope you have a better weekend to follow. Hey, Rex, what's happening?
Hello, hello, hello. Not much.
Yeah, that's what I feel. Not much at all. But, but it's the end of another fine week. Tell you, they just roll past. I find it so hard to believe that it's already the 8th of September. It's like, I blink my eyes again, it'll be 2024, I think. Pretty amazing.
Pretty enough close to.
What's that, hun?
Pretty enough close to.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing, you know. They say time flies when you're having fun. I want to know what this excuse is. Yeah, you know? I don't know. Hey, and just to let you know, we have a caller. We have Laurent on the line, so I'm going to pick him up. Hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Pip, pip, cheerio, folks. How's it going?
All right. What's happening?
Yeah, what's happening?
Is it all right? That's good. Bloody good.
Of course.
Bob's your uncle.
There you go.
No, it's Jake, you fool. Jake's me uncle. Bob's me cousin.
Oh, God. Crazy.
hey, look, you know, you yourself spoke about I'm flying, et cetera, et cetera. It's flying by fast as you can believe. Well, got to stop, pause, try to have a little bit of fun occasionally, right?
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree.
No, you want a whole lot of fun. I'm saying just a little bit of fun.
Yeah, I know. I know. Fun is fun is fun in my book. You know. Well, it does vary in degrees, but, you know, it's okay. Hey, we got another caller. Guess who's on the line?
James Hatfield.
No. No.
I took a shot.
Naomi.
Kim is on the line.
Oh, my gosh. First, I'm James Hatfield. Then I'm Naomi. Oh, my goodness.
it's not like you made a mistake on the board.
It's my honorable co-host. How are you doing, honorable co-host?
I am doing wonderful. Finally got the internet set up so I can get back to using my Kindle Fire. You know,
cool,
life is good.
Cool.
Yeah, life is good. Hi, Gene. Hi, Rex. Hi, Lauren. Good to hear y'all.
Yeah, you sound like you're in the pink.
I am tickled pink all over. Well, maybe not all over. Wrong night for that.
Let's discuss some follow that thread of thought.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So, let me see now. I don't know. We have a good board of poetry tonight. Looks like it should be some kind of fun. You know. Everybody just stops talking all of a sudden. What is that? It's like all of a sudden.
Well,
a kind of
the voice took
over.
Voice took over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a kind of hush all over the world tonight.
Yeah, no, don't make me refer to Queen Fire to, I mean, never mind.
Watch it. Okay, Pam, we'll see you in a minute. Yeah. So, anyway. Yep, well, I'm glad everybody's so talkative now all of a sudden, so I guess I have to think of something to say. Anyway, hello, James, and hello, Darkened Auras, and I don't think I saw anybody else in the room, so it's good to have you all here. Hope you're all going to enjoy the show. James, I hope you figured out why you couldn't hear the audio.
I think it was because it was too early.
Maybe.
You can't touch the audio button until the show starts.
Yeah, otherwise it just goes nothing. Nothing, nothing,
yep.
Nothing. Yeah. I've done that a few times. I go, why won't this? Oh, I'm a minute early. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Anyway. Yeah, so I guess we should get this party started. So let me...
if you insist, let's have at it.
Okay, well, Rex, I'm going to give you this piece first. And this is a Frank piece. Saga of Seder. Well, I'm going to pretend like I know what I'm saying. By Poetic Picasso. Whenever you're ready, Rex.
Saga of the Seder by Poetic Picasso. Whither amidst the list of the welcome... Oh, maybe it starts again. Whither amidst the list of the welcome he, the soul to the last truce that had torn, and a worthy tale understood in the rooms within a lore of wise elders of the Saxons. By the knolls that tarry in a slade of tors, the oldest tale aforetime was born. The dwinner and witches and wizards, kept alive withal by Vikings and Frisians. Whilom kingdoms of the Saxon swayed, with heirs and thew of sons of Waldorf, as the craving for might elsewhere arrived, and talked of their father and end of kinsmen. Ulrich, blinded by the guile of his wife, forded in vain under a dwellsome Galdor, as the gods did not forget the deviness, or did the bereft offspring of the brethren. In his madness, he furked to within the iron fist that he came to wield. As his gruel Gart, an uprising of freemen, and thanes and athelings that fought him. Pure from fold unto the sea he wended, and his wayward foes stormed the old field, thumping the ground of the land as old foes, in the horde of Wulricks that on came by a brim. Hence a witherwood word of Wulric man, the wheels of elves and wicks of dwarf, who was feckless and not unwavering to halt guards of the onset of the Nithings. They fraced the wraith to thwart elsewhither, the wath-worn that strode for Morth, as Ingwe Frey sought Fulhelm from Godric, under fanging an errand of the Aethlings. He told Godric of the ween of the elves, he tiding within a brog that was naught, as his dun and gloomy guise bore dog, mourning the loss of Brain Key Asgard. He warned the king of the Saxons amain, threeping him for what the oath taught, as Godric knew that his brother was nigh, and Helia roamed about in Midgard. The goddess shaped herself as a maiden, and beswoke Wulric through her grilled spell, as her woad gaunt host on the Saxons was felt, while she rode with the ears of Wulric, and strode forth a horde of Bale and Burr, unto a branch slayed as brass strife befell, at the gleam of midday hither and thither, glisten upon the fearless lyre of Godric. Hela sought a book kept by Snorth elders, as Godric his brother knew his madness, and Wulric had abided with his words broadly, at a hidden Midgard that began to enmesh. Hildric's fort thwart with a strength, as the winsome sky lapped in the darkness, and a will of Hela overwhelmed Hela, with the dales strewed with blood afresh. And Dalaman of Godric fell straight away, the blazing broad-burning Burnies whole, as dirthing throes of woes were heard, sweltering as leaves in the grip of the fire. When it seemed doom befell on Godric, he belight the noughts he worth it whole, as a rain drenched the ground in blood, whilst men of Godric wallowed in a mire. On his sleven was a gormed by the gods, abreast the sickless woe, abreast the sackless gore that often blew, and Galdir, the keeper of the book, came upon the light of the welkin that shone. With a staff he throated the men of Wulric, and bodies of Twitends upon barrows flew, as the war of God and evil began twofold, where the till eyes of the gods were lone. Twain Baldur stood with a swear stare, abreast their wrought swords yare to slay, whilst fighting and forsaking their own, and the trig brotherhood of their father. Their eyes drevved within the smartness, with helter swords striking on that day, as Ellen was heard from the hummocks, when unearthed Godric slew a leaf brother. He fell to one knee and mourned with rue the death he had asked for forgiveness, whence Hela had fled the Midgard Astoreling from Galdir, the dynam of the Saxons. The gods had not before let the son of Wuldor, when Galdera bore Warden's brightness, and the time of the gods was to end ever before the main of their swift weapons. The endless wars of the thieves with an old lay, years of the gaves and years to come, as Saxons forsook the malts of the gods and their est ones within the weather. A book of Galdor was timed as it behooved at the bottom of the thorn waters at home, locked forthwith with the key of Odin, within the unforgotten saga of the Seder and poem, my God forgive me.
Bloody hell.
Oh, that was most unexpected. Thank you, Gene.
Hey, that's our bitch, Respin. That was just yours.
And what was it you said last week? No, I'm only kidding.
Yeah, I got that one.
Was not my intent, oh, but no. I make it work. Oh my God!
God, what a way to start! What a way to start the evening!
Yeah, yeah, that was on last week's board. Yes. We just had to carry it forward. Oh, yeah.
Okay, Laurent, you want to kick us off?
Well, I'm hiding the big smile on my face as I heard you read so commandingly, and then proceeded on down to see exactly what it was that you were about to spend the next 3 minutes on. And I was mightily impressed by your ability. I wonder if you did not, I don't know, spill your blood on the ground with that one. That took an iron and articulate tongue. You must be very popular with the women because you did a great job in that respect, as did Poetic Picasso, who, quite frankly, has impressed the crap out of me. This is well beyond my poor powers, not only to write, but the recall, the ability to use Old English the way he did, taking his romantic bent and weaving it into a tale based on the mythology and legends that are found among the Saxons and others, and to create and to craft something like this is just, I don't know, I'm in awe, basically. It's skilled with words, skilled with names, the intimate knowledge he seems to have of this kind of Old English, which unfortunately does require a little bit of research down to his very extensive author's notes, which help out enormously. There was a comment that said, I wish you would write this in current English because the story itself is fascinating, and that might be an interesting, although perhaps less rewarding way of telling the story. Either way, this is breathtaking, and you're reading Rex bears praise for the amount of weight that you gave it and the skill with which you walked the poem for its verbal.
Great comment, and thank you very much. All right, Gene, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think, Frank, first off, I hear these words in my head going, are you blushing, Gene? Yes, yes. Yes, they've come to the forefront of my mind. No, I'm only kidding. I really had no idea this piece was as intricate as it was. But you brought it up, so it made me laugh. I thought this was a great story told by Frank. Amazing work, rich with amazing vocabulary, very well written. And, you know, it was a great share. So, you know, thank you so much. The author's note just blew me away. I'm like, okay, it's almost as long as the poem. You know, so much vocabulary to be explained. I'm like, wow.
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm like, okay, I'll be lucky if I catch up, you know. But definitely an excellent piece and, yeah, really well penned. So thank you for asking, Rex.
All right. Thank you, Gene. You back, Pam?
No, she ran away with a good. Oh, she is.
Oh my God! No,
I figured
no, no.
He was smart and just left.
I did not run away. I heard Rex start to read that in that sexy voice of his, and I just swooned. That's what it was. I was too busy swooning.
Swooning. Oh my!
And seriously, though, Rex, that was an amazing read. You did fabulous with that. It really was. I mean, the way you had command of those Old English words, definitely. And this was, by all means, such an epic write. I like that he delved into, that Frank delved into playing with the Old English. I was very thankful that he put the... words down in his A-N. I like how he delves also into the land of the Norse mythology. I particularly like when it seemed doom befell on Godric, he behight the gods who were to roll as a rain drenched the ground in blood, whilst men of Godric wallowed in a mire. You know, wonderful phrasing. I mean, you could just see what these... men and their families, their warriors are going through. I mean, it grand, it's epic, and I also really like that he used the Old English, the name Woden, the Old Norse name for Odin. I thought was a really nice touch. It really had a classic feel to it, so very well done.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you, Pam. Well, I'm going to say the leadoff was right, Saga. Most times you hear that, you don't really think about it until you get into it. And, yes, this is what most people would actually label as the real saga, the tale itself. And, actually, you know what, Frank? I'm really impressed with the language and digging deep in the history, playing out that language. So you could actually write something as wonderful as this. And I apologize for some of my tongue misses in the piece itself, but I enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Not often you get, oh my God, what did I just read?
I thought it was kind of amazing that down in the author's note, this is one of 12 pieces.
Well, you know, it takes quite a bit of, well, not just the research, but then you got to plan out the how you're going to voice it. And that's not an easy task with all the work that you've got to draw from.
Absolutely.
You got to play with it in your mind a bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so it was a great piece. Different to start off with. Speaking of different, the next piece I have to put up, we're going to have Laurent kick it off. And this is called The Captain and Me by me and Laurent. So, Laurent, whenever you're ready.
All right. I'm reading this by myself, right? Yes. Okay, The Captain and Me. She's a warlock mistress with multiple names. She looses my bonds, yet leaves me in chains. Message by touch, which tells me so much. Shiver me timbers and rattle your bones. Stay chained in the brig, distraught and alone. You're high on my list of forbidden favors. The tastes of a pirate I'm eager to savor. Thrashing of waves has jumbled your head. Tossing and turning, but not yet in me bed. Breathe on my flesh, I'm insurmountable. No amount of derision will make you unmountable. Much time at sea has driven you mad. Parleys uncertain, your fate ironclad. May you spin, luring me in, guiding the structure of inevitable juncture. Stand up and move near. Let me loosen your chains. Show me your strengths and roam free once again. An assassin might kill for diamonds and gold, but I'm a bedroom killer whose story needs to be told. I've traveled the seas from Spain to Bombay, to the ends of the earth, and I've this much to say. You bewitch me, bedevil me. I'm snared by your net. In the mane of your hair, my fingers play the duet. Like a picture that's framed, I like your position. Don't dare make a move. It's a pleasant collision. Pleasurable it was. Strong, sturdy sword. His challenge was met to end this discord. Sword and scabbard and treasures at sea. A chest and the pirates. Both the captain and me. And poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Pam, we can start with you.
This is just a fabulous collaboration. Now, I do enjoy a good pirate write so much. You know, what you guys should do is sometime you should do another pirate write, but the next time put it through an English, modern English to pirate translator just for the fun of it. To see how it comes out. You know, this really just puts me in a swashbuckling mood. I really like it all the way through. But I do like especially the opening. She's a warlock mistress with a multiple names. She loses my bond yet leaves me in chains, a message by touch which tells me so much. And of course the great lines like shiver me timbers and rattle your bones, stay chained in the brig, distraught and alone. The back and forth is great fun. How it has a playfulness to it. And I can definitely tell that the two of you had fun together with this. So very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
And Laurent, you got to read it, though. So. I said, wait a minute. It was a double dipping on that one, right? The two of you?
Yeah. Well, Gina had come to me with a few lines or a few stanzas, but it had good bones, and she wanted to collaborate, and there we go. It worked out nicely, I thought.
Absolutely, because you can't do better than the art of wenching is when you're clenching a knife between your teeth. The skirts, they fly, the knickers sky high, and our loins, they are a seas. So, on that note,
I marched for the loins, Wood.
Well, you could always go around the other end. All right, she's got me sword in her hand, but I'll brand her bum for that in the process.
Now we're branding bums. You should put up a
yeah. And tis a red-headed pirate at that, or sea witch, or otherwise some kind of warrior. But the captain and me, that's kind of funny. That goes back to the 70s group. But what was it? Captain and Tennille?
There you go.
Did you know that the name Jean means fire witch?
No. I'm going to leave that one alone. I've already had one really good opening tonight. A second will do me in.
I think Jean Marie meant fire witch. I think Jean meant queen of fire, if I remember correctly.
I like fire witch better, I think.
Yes. Well, Jean is queen. So it says. Yes, Selena, we have been. There's a whole bunch of them on our pages. But, yeah.
Sailing, over
the
sounding
wind.
Railing, and nothing is the same. All right.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll lit that one up. Yes. Yes, Fire Witch, we're back to you.
Yes.
Okay. Gotta take advantage of everything you're throwing.
Where do we get the next one? Here we go. I'm going to read this next one. It's called Making It Out Alive.
Well, that's kind of apropos considering what you just went through.
Yes. Making It Out Alive by Jenny the Deep. In your hidden catacomb, my heart was your most valued treasure. Now in ruins is our home. Lost in love's fire is all of our pleasure. My heart was your most valued treasure, very deep, unable to be found. My love for you was beyond measure, was always intensely profound. Very deep, unable to be found, when I discovered your love was a sham. My heart hit the crumbling ground, feeling like your sacrificial lamb. When I discovered your love was a sham, I broke down hysterically, looking like a fool. Maybe you never did give a damn, but did you have to be such a twisted fool or tool? And a poem.
I like that, the irony in that last line. Nice touch there, Jim. Laurent, what do you think?
Well, that's a good description of an implement, a twisted tool. But it's also so much more than that, assuming that a man is a tool for pleasure or a comfort or support
both emotional and financial. If he handles none of those things well, he does become a twisted tool. Not that he's only a tool, but, you know, when you spurn a heart, when you discard love, you are a twisted person. That she is immortalized in rhyme, and decent rhyme, good rhyme. The ending, those last two lines, I really like the phrase twisted tool. I think it's very apt. Nice poem.
Thank you, Laurent. And Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I'm trying to, I don't know. You know what? I'm sorry. I'll just leave a written comment.
Okay. Gene, what do you think?
Well, you know, I thought it was a nicely penned piece by Jenny, and I thought the thoughts were well expressed. I liked her use of the form, the Pantoum form. You know, it was, I thought it added a little something to it with the repeat lines and carrying it forward. And, it is a sad piece, you know. You know, in your hidden catacomb, my heart was your most valued treasure. Now in ruins is our home. Lost in love's fire is all of our pleasure. You know, and I think she just expressed her thoughts so nicely all the way through, and I think it really did build up as we went along. And it was pretty funny the way she ended it. You know, maybe you never did give a damn, but did you have to be such a twisted tool? Yeah. Well, that was one way to say it. and at least it rhymes. See, words I had in mind wouldn't have rhymed. So just nice work, Jenny, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. Yeah, I did like that note on the last line. That's a touch of humor to what is a dark note, sad note. That mm-hmm. sort of in your hat hidden catacomb, my heart was your most valued treasure. Well, obviously not, as you roll on. My heart was your most valued treasure, very deep, unable to be found. And then I too like the repeat in that second line from each stanza. That's a Pantoum. Oh, actually, yes, it is. The opposite of a Pantoum. So it keeps everything connected, rolling downwards, and sets you on a set path as far as the rhyme scheme and your thoughts itself. That very last line was the set note and the killer for the whole thing, because you start out with the catacomb up top and you kind of finish with making sure he's full out known on the bottom end as being that piece of that still belongs in the catacombs by himself. Nicely done, Jen. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jimmy. Rebecca, to you.
Well, Pam, that's going to bring me to you. So, this piece is called Consumed Innards by Darkened Auras. And whenever you're ready.
All right.
Ooh.
She used to love eating octopus. Now it is herself she finds devoured, sucking at her insides. Every inch of her is scoured, eating every organ so delicious, her blood a fine red wine. As it looks around, it thinks, this host will do just fine. Cracking bones to become new muscles, it stretches into every inch, and her body starts to decay. People start gagging from the stench. She goes down to the day boats, a horrific sight to see, murders all the fishermen there to set her people free. She gave a haunting message to the few she left alive. Anyone else who consumes octopuses will no longer survive. A scream belted from the girl as she exploded, blasting guts. The ones who had witnessed this are now certified as nuts. and poem.
Great lead, Dan. Thank you very much. Gene, you got first lift. You're muted.
I didn't even know I did that. Wow, you talked about being a creature of habit. I thought this was the way she penned it was really unnerving in the for the first half of it, I'll say. Eating every organ so delicious, her blood, a fine red wine as it looks around and thinks, this host will do just fine. And then the decay and all this other, as you come on down. And then all of a sudden she gave a haunting message to the few she left alive. Anyone else who consumes octopuses will no longer survive. What a crazy tale, And at first, when I saw the image, I went, oof. First, I thought she was eating something, and then all of a sudden, it was like, no. So that's kind of something else. But great job, Christina. A wonderful take on that prompt. I assume the picture was a prompt, and very well done. A tale well told.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jean. Is that for octopus? Laurent, how about you?
Well, this is a classic case of what you eat ends up eating you. The idea that there's an octopus inside of her that is devouring her, sucking at her insides. Every inch of her is scoured, eating every organ so delicious. Her blood, a fine red wine. And it's kind of mock serious in the beginning. And it goes through some really creative descriptions, cracking bones to become new muscles. It stretches in every inch. As her body starts to decay, people start gagging from the stench. And it continues in a kind of mock seriousness because, there's the occasional phrase here or there that shows that it is not deadly serious at all, and proves it with the last lines, and the ones who had witnessed this are now certified as nuts. That kind of takes away the possibility that the poem is serious and transforms it, I think, into a clever rite that starts off as one thing and it kind of ends up as another. Perhaps not what is intended by the poet when the poem was started, but he resolved it with that ending, and I think it works just fine.
Thanks, Laurent. Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Oh, this was great. Wonderful. Creepy, visceral imagery, great rhyme and flow. Wonderful storytelling. It made me think of, you remember the first Men in Black movie where the alien creature lands in the hillbilly's yard? Yes. And then there's all the dead carcass walks in going, sugar. It's like that. I really liked the imagery and the lines of cracking bones become new muscles. It stretches into every inch. As her body starts to decay, people start gagging from the stench. And then those end lines were great, too, because that did have that bit of dark, twisted humor that works so well in a rite like this. As she a scream belted from the girl as she exploded, blasting guts, the ones who had witnessed this are now certified as nuts. Great write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Kenny. I like it. It's sci-fi in the style of What If, but it does draw on the truth of eating an octopus wrapped on a stick is a delicacy because they're alive. You got to swallow it whole in the moment. And then there's that What If question. If it bypasses the sulfuric acid that's born of our bellies, what happens then? She kind of drives on that point and that thought with the back end of this,
a scream belched from the girl as she exploded, blasting guts to ones who had witnessed this are now certified as nuts. There's that idea of evolving into the octopus face from a Pirates of the Caribbean, except being in full regalia of octopus. I like that thought. Twisted. Devious. And yeah,
hey,
that would turn people nuts.
Hey, Rex.
Yeah.
There, in a James Bond movie, I'm not sure which one, an octopus figured in the name of one of the female characters. You remember
yeah.
what it was?
Octopussy.
If it was. Very good. Nice bet.
Hey, just like what was the very first one was? Oh my God! Oh, Pussy Galore.
Oh, that was in Goldfinger.
And then the next, then he had Ivana Onatopp.
I remember, yeah. You're a fan. You're a fan.
Gotta have fun. All right, Gene, we're coming back to see you.
Okay. Well, Rex, I'm coming back to you. I have a poem here called Sol's Marbles by Ben Hart. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Sol's Marbles by Ben Hart. Neptune. Rhinestone rain makes Neptune's abysmal plains of frost, burning over methane fields, at least the prettiest nothingness. Salus. 13 steps to Salus, sideways orbit of a sun. It cannot see or feel, but trust it's there for the sake of its twin, even further still, Saturn. Agate asteroids, maroon moon dust, and kidnapped comets create a halo for the saint of thieves, Jupiter. Blue north. Jupiter's last port before the storm, always a red eye. And poet. All right, Pam, get this in, please.
Great. First of all, great read there, Rex. As always, a wonderful, wonderful write by Ben. You know, beautifully written and a really nice brevity. I have to say that my favorite part is part three, where the description of Saturn, agate asteroids, maroon moon dust, and kidnapped comets create a halo for the saint of thieves. And I like how he both goes into the description of the planet, but also touches on the mythology of the planet. And I like how he does that with this verse. It's like taking a look at the heavens, but it's also taking a look at mythology. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, I like the marbles aspect in the title, you know, comparing the planets to the marbles. And the descriptions through this were really well done. And I thought it was a clever piece, much shorter than I'm used to seeing from Ben. So nice work there with that, you know, a good brevity for sure. Each one of these, each one is really well described. You know, Neptune. Rhinestone rain makes Neptune's abyssal plains of frost burning over methane fields, at least the prettiest nothingness. You know, each little snippet was just really nicely done. Would have liked to have seen a few more planets at this rate, you know, like, why not? But well done, Ben, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
Laurent, how about you?
This is a delightful poetic exercise, taking small moons and large planets and writing a piece about them. the abyssal plains of frost bring over methane fields is beautifully poetic as an image, but it's also good hard science, which is what I like, as is the sideways orbit of a sun that Caelius cannot see or feel. It's in its own orbit. It happens to be around. It happens to have a sideways orbit. The blue north, Jupiter's last port of the storm, always a red eye, in number four, the Jupiter. Jupiter has a storm. It's an eternal storm. And its center is red and does look like an eye. And it has been there for hundreds of years, if not thousands, and will continue to be there. It's a fascinating concept, an eternal storm that is always raging, fed by the natural materials and what is found in Jupiter's atmosphere. So he blends science with poetics beautifully. It's quite the piece.
Oh, absolutely. I found that last one pretty cool, too, because it hits that blue north, Jupiter's last port before the storm. There's truth in that. I think it's a hexagonal shape at the top of Jupiter with a small hole in the top, and it is bluish before that red eye claims the biggest note to be fascinated with Jupiter on. But Saturn, too, hits on that idea. Agate asteroids, maroon moon dust, and kidnapped comets create a halo for the Saint of Days. That's a nice, clever note, too, as well as the rhinestone rain. Quite the thought. Something that sparkles in different colored notes, rhinestone rain. Well done, Ben. Thank you very much. All right, Jane. Right back to you.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, Dad. I got a long one and shorty.
Laurent, I'm going to give you the next one. It's a piece called Luke's Blue Ballad by Jack Blue. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Luke's Blue Ballad number 3. The ancient tunes float around the bluish mist when the fallen leaves of some magic mountain twinkle with joyful lilac without a bit of wizardry. The monochrome shade plays a fine kaleidoscope as the noble snowflakes of an old cherry tree turn into starry blooms through the winter silence. All the leaves sparkle like overlapping crystals, ablaze in lavender or lilac, and enchant ghostly trees that make them bloom bright around the newborn wood. Do dark, uncanny witches cast an everlasting spell for haughty, naughty poets in the moonlit dissonance when the fallen leaves twinkle on the tree? Do anxious, angry singers of tiny, shady melodies speak to dreamy elves in a crazy, dizzy voice when the withered trees rejoice a bloom like drunken? A faraway, transparent dream dreams like a misty rainbow or a silent monochrome for tomorrow as the times or yesterday's fairy tales resound like the gleam of lilac. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, what do you think?
Well, you know, as always with Luke's work, it's very creative. I like his use of colors always. You know, and he goes from the bluish mist and the twilight, twinkle of joyful lilac, and then we have lavender or lilac, you know, all the way through. He just carries the colors, and he keeps speaking on monochrome, which is, you know, he stays all within that palette. It was nicely done. Do anxious, angry singers of shiny, shady melodies speak to dreamy elves in a crazy, dizzy voice when the withered trees rejoice a bloom like drunken? It's always a little bit enchanting, like fairy-like. It always has that kind of a feel to me, his work. So nice work. I'm not sure. It says translated prosodically from this German poem of mine. So apparently he writes in a couple different languages, which I find to be intriguing. You know. Pam, would you read us the German version?
Nine?
10. But, you know, I think it's pretty amazing, you know, when you see someone who writes something in one language and then, you know, transforms it over to the other. I think it was a nice piece. So well done, and thank you for sharing with us, Luke. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, James. Pam, you're up, since you won't read it in German.
Well, my thing is technically I could read the German, but I read German better than I understand German, so I couldn't tell you if it actually how the translation worked, you know. So that, and I just like to say nine. So, but I thought this was great. Wonderful use of imagery and metaphors in it. There is a kind of a whimsy and a playfulness to this. I really like the imagery of as the noble snowflakes of an old cherry tree turn into starry blooms through the wintry silence. Like, there's a twofold feeling I got to that. First of all, the obvious feeling of winter itself, but also how, like, when cherry trees lose their blossoms, and it really does look like it's snowing because they all just start falling at once. And I do like the questions in here. Do dark, uncanny witches cast an everlasting spell to haughty, naughty poets in the moonlit dissonance when the fallen leaves twinkle on the trees? This takes me, lines like that and the ones following it, take me to the idea of the Halloween time of year where there's mischief making and, you know, revelry and drunkenness and, you know, you could just, everybody's having fun. Everybody, you know, it's like a whole mischief night thing going on. And I just really like the vibe of that. So wonderful, right? And very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, Luke's Blue Ballad number 3 is a fascinating piece. The monochrome shade plays a fine kaleidoscope as the noble snowflakes of an old cherry tree turn into starry blooms through the wintry silence. That's a unique description. The image is very rewarding, as is the other image. All the leaves sparkle like overlapping crystals ablaze in a lavender or lilac. And I think that image is unique as well. The overlapping crystals especially, it takes a fine bit of writing to use the words he uses, and they make sense. Sometimes, you know, we get crazy images that don't make a lot of sense to the poem, but this does, and I appreciate that. Great work.
Thank you, Laurent. I like that first sentence. It bites right at the end of it. A twinkling, joyful lilac without a bit of wizardry. So he's getting out of that note of magic, so to speak, yet creating it itself through the language. A monochrome shade plays a fine kaleidoscope as the noble snowflakes of an old cherry tree turn into starry blossoms through the wintry silence. Nice touch with that. And then you got, he rolls into the fourth stanza. Do dark, uncanny witches cast an everlasting spell? The haughty, naughty poet in the moonlit distance when the fallen leaves twinkle on the tree. So now he's dipped himself into the magic by voice again, but offering up those notes of the haughty, naughty poets, those who dip into the thought of that monochrome shade, the ancient tunes afloat, the magic in the air itself, not instead relying on the act of creating magic, but the magic and joy that comes within that which you can see and hear, and then turning that into something which walks into the magical realm, whether it's offering up witches or elves or anything else that sparks the imagination in the moment, because you've been delivered there because of what's going on around you in the moment. So, nicely done, Jack. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. Right back to you.
Okie dokie. Well, the next piece I have to put up is called Death of a Soldier by Stellina. And I have a sound clip for that. I have an audio for that. It used to be an audio somewhere else. But now it's the one over here. Anyway, I'm going to stop being silly. Okay, let me hit the button.
Shattered and broken on the crimson-stained earth lies what once was a man. Congealed limbs which ran in sweet-smelling meadows once in another land. Cycling down country lanes in early morning mist without a single care. Now putrefying in a foreign field, copious in poisonous air. Sensitive hands which caress the beloved skin in dawn's soft blushing glow. Sans flesh with bones exposed as white and pure as newly fallen snow. Burly arms which lifted children high and cradled them to sleep, torn and twisted, mangled and raw, nearby in a heap. The heart so full of love, so brave and true when marching off to war, blown from the chest and trampled down in the forest's ferny floor. There is no honor to be found here, nor glory to replace the gaping loss of what once was, or of a loved one's face.
Great read, Stellina. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. Much appreciated. And Brock, I want to start with you.
Can you come right back to me, please?
Sure. Pam, you get the bus.
I know. I felt that bus hit me. Jeez. but I thought this was wonderful. You know, as always, Stellina does a great job with her SoundCloud. Great choice of background music. I know she really has a talent for writing, but especially for writing war poetry, because I think it's something that she really puts her heart into. Like, she sees the people, the humanity within the conflict of war. Powerful, emotive lines. And I like how this writes on the losses of war, even though it focuses in on one person, you know, one soldier, I should say, and their death and their, you know, their physical death. It speaks on all that they have left behind. You know, they have left behind children and a spouse and a mother and a father and all these people that cared about them. All these people that loved this soldier are suffering a loss. And I really like the imagery, and it especially touches my heart when it says, you know, sans flesh with bones as well as white and pure as newly fallen snow, burly arms which lifted children high and cradled them to sleep, torn and twisted, mangled and raw. You know, and to think that those arms will no longer hold their children physically, you know, that the, and that heart will never, you know, express love. It just, it hurts, you know, and it's a wonderful thing, I think, when poetry can make you feel this much. So great write and very well done.
Awesome. Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was another wonderful piece by Selena. It was a powerful piece, vivid imagery, and it really captures the reader's attention. And I think the emotions were just so well expressed. So, you know, thank you for sharing with us tonight, Selena. Great job with this.
Nice. Nice. And back to you, Laurent.
Dead and broken on the crimson-stained earth lies what once was a man. It's a great introduction. It gives us a very clear picture of, well, she has an image that is kind of difficult to look at. It's pretty horrible what death does to a human body. But he brings this man alive when he's describing the congealed limbs which ran in sweet-smelling meadows once in another land, hearkening back to the land that he comes from, cycling down country lanes. In the early morning mist, without a single hair, now putrefying in a barren field, she does the back and forth, showing the man alive and what happened to him in life and what was now happening to him in death. That she uses language that is delicate and descriptive, yet she doesn't mince words at all when she says, blown from the chest and trampled down the forest's ferny floor. And there are moments of great alliteration in this as well. And it's another fine piece from us, Selena.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, everybody. I got to agree with y'all. There's also a note of tenderness that rolls through this as well as the sadness, because you open up with a different angle altogether with, second part, cycling down country lanes in early morning mist without a single care. There's that quiet note of something else hidden in there as to what once was, as to now is, that note of copious and poison air, then sensitive hands with a which caressed the beloved's skin and dawned soft blushing glow. So there's a little back and forth with the reality in the moment and what once was, which is a great way of offering up the disparity that walks within the shoes that once was but now is. So, well, that's for women.
Sorry.
All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okie doke. Pam, I have this next piece for you. It's called August Sky by Casey Day. Whenever you're ready.
I want to burn up like a naked August sky. It's a cool autumn night, but there's still some of you inside my blood. With daylight gone, I can push away the dawn higher than a dream, a continuous stream where lovers like we floated on. For the love I'll never find, I keep living in my mind, be stuck here for the rest of my goddamn life. I'm a part of the past, in a whisper they ask, is it a wedding if the groom doesn't come? We were moving too fast and you stabbed my back and asked me, where'd the bloodstain come from? So burn me alive, let my screams reach the sky, because we both know my ashes were never meant to fly free. Lay me in the dirt, it doesn't hurt, as long as the sun kisses the apples of my cheeks. Don't look for me, let my life lie. See me on the backs of your eyes when you cry, like a cloud against the naked, red August sky. End poem.
Great read, Tim. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
That's a fine, fine poem and a great read by Pam. I was listening to it literally with my eyes closed, which is dangerous because I could fall asleep. But I thought that Casey Day did a great job with this. Oh, wait a second. Which one are we on?
August Sky.
Okay, for some reason I thought it was so hot. I want to burn up like a naked August sky. It's a cool autumn night, but there's still some of you inside my blood. The way she coined that phrase, I thought was rather nice. There's still some of you inside my blood. With daylight gone, I can push away the dawn, higher than a dream. It manipulates nature to serve the poem. For the love I'll never find, I keep living in my mind. She dwells in her imagination, creating what she needs to, because it doesn't exist in real life. It's a fine right that achieves a certain measure of, I want to use the word fire, strong emotion. So burn me alive when my screams reach the sky, because we both know my ashes were never meant to fly free. The ashes that she refers to can be the remains of a life that has basically burnt itself up, if you will. And all that's left are ashes. And those ashes were never meant to fly free. There's going to be no phoenix rising from those ashes to create a new person. She says, as she says, let my life lie. Don't bother, you know. I'm ashes. That's all I'm going to do. It's brilliant, right? And very sad.
Thank you, Lino. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. It's wonderful imagery and metaphors. It really hits hard. A great write on the whole idea of suffering from betrayal. And there's a real bite to the question. I'm a part of the past in a whisper they ask. Is it a wedding if the groom doesn't come? We were moving too fast and you stabbed my back and asked me where the bloodstains come from. It kind of got that whole feeling of whitewashing, the whole idea of playing games with someone's mind. And, you know, the ending comes in and you think of how much, you know, this poor woman is suffering emotionally. And lay me in the dirt, it doesn't hurt as long as the sun kisses the apples of my cheeks. Here at this point, I think, is the whole idea of how she would rather face death than to face this overwhelming feeling of pain from being betrayed. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean.
How did that name come? You know, I thought this was really well penned. I thought the emotions were really well expressed. It's funny because the two sections I picked were the ones Pam also picked. You know, I'm a part of the past, and a whisper they asked, is it a wedding if the groom doesn't come? We were moving too fast, and you stabbed my back and asked me where the bloodstains come from. You know, loss and betrayal and you know, the hurt. And, yeah, you know, just bury me. You know, it's easier than dealing with the disgrace and the loss and all of that. And, you know, it was just a really well-done piece. And I have to apologize to Casey Day because I never saw that there was a SoundCloud. Since I don't read the poems before the show, I totally missed it. So shame on me. But Pam, you did a great job, so I don't think she'll be too upset with me. But, yeah, great piece. So thank you, Casey, for sharing with us. As always, it was a great write.
Thank you, guys. I got to start with that picture. That's a gorgeous picture. But if you notice, the bottom one-third of that
actually looks like lips done out in a blazing red across the cloud surface, but they actually look like a set of lips, which was a nice touch. But she also did a, because of the color palette in this, she also offered up red throughout the whole piece without actually getting into red. You've got a burn up, blood stains, what else we got? Burn me alive. But I thought the back end of this with the thought with how this rolls, it's more than just a betrayal, although that's definitely a part of it. The back end hits with the idea, as long as it's on Kiss of the Apple, the Magic, another reference to red right there. Don't look for me. My life, lie. See me on the backs of your eyes when you cry. That's distinctive. That has me thinking of an Ophelia-like moment, floating in face up, looking at the sky, dead, given up for life, so to speak, like a cloud against the naked red August sky. Something there's another beauty in hitting on the idea that I want you to remember me in this moment as you see this right now. And that is everything that can be passed along, it's kind of gripping, and it's also a note to what do you want to call it, the last hurrah, so to speak. I like that. Thank you, Casey.
All
right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, Rex. I'm going to put this next one up for you. And Pam, I have to step aside for a few minutes. So if I'm not back before everything's said and done, could you put up the next one for me?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Rex, here goes. It's called After the Trumpet Sound by Marvelous Jarvis.
Okay. After the trumpet sound, Marvelous Jarvis. To look upon the waves as they come crashing down makes me wonder if or how many will be or still be around. When the bell rings from them up on Wall Street, we will all have money for food or little things to eat. If we don't, let me just fill you in on how I will survive or much less win. We would have been prepared, for we knew the day would come where the stars would all fall straight from the sun. Burning up in the air and crops on the ground, there would be a bunker built deep just south of the town to hold the ones that I care so much for, and when they all get there, I will be no more. Unless there is a bigger plan I don't see, and I'm stuck here preaching of the fabulous dream. In a land that was almost covered in sin when the trumpet blew and sent most people in, to their forever homes up in the sky, will I be here, or one of the guys who got called home because I live right? Or will I have to sit and put up a fight to get the reward of eternal life? Will I be saved or killed by the knife? Off with their heads, they would scream while they feast, because I knew it was coming and didn't accept the mark of the beast. To live life in doubt and have yourself running for glory, how will it play out in my life story? Will I have been saved and sucked up in the clouds, or fight for my life down here on the ground? These thoughts should worry a person who I say lives in doubt. And if this person should figure things out. And boom. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. And, I like the imagery in this. I like the storytelling. I like how it's that combination of Alice in Wonderland and the Book of Revelation by God. But besides that, I was like, okay, who wrote the Book of Revelation? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's in the Bible. But it's also kind of like that whole, like, the Left Behind series feeling to it. I liked the flow to his word choices. And the imagery of burning up in the air and crops on the ground. There would be a bunker built deep just south of the town to hold the ones that I care so much for. And when they all get there, I will be no more unless there's a big plan, bigger plan. Don't see, and I'm stuck up here preaching of the fabulous three. I really think that's an awesome turn of phrase to call the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit the fabulous three. Very cool there. Definitely like how he brought the Alice in Wonderland, Queen of Hearts into it. And I like the lines, to live life in doubt and have yourself running for glory. How will it play out in my life story? You know, the whole idea of looking back on your life and wondering what you will have made of it. And so wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you? But you got to unmute first. God, we've been empty now, Pam, huh?
Well, I'm back now. So. I'm back, but I can't say I heard the poem. Laurent, you want to comment on that?
I think Laurent's up there, but I'll go. I think there's a twofold note in there. The question of being, have I been righteous enough and followed the word that I might get into heaven, or will I be forced to stand and defend, so to speak? And then there's that note of angst in the voice almost, as I have tried to walk that path, yet there is so much evil around. What will be at the end of things? What will be my lot? Will I be one of those chosen, or will I be one forced to stand my ground then and there because I didn't stand my ground enough beforehand? I thought that was a clever bite at the piece itself. Thank you, Marvel.
Okay.
Rod, you back?
Where the heck you got to?
Well, I'm going to leave that one alone. He might have needed a bit of a release, 10.
Maybe. Okay, well, I have the next piece to go up. I have Addicted to Reality by Arcana Amor.
Were you waiting for me? Because I didn't hear my name.
Yeah, 15 times over.
Oh. And I'm conscious, too. I'm amazed I missed that. I'm sorry. I'm wondering, who do they want to comment? I listened to the poem. I enjoyed it. It's Armageddon, the end of things, this is where all the stars would fall straight from the sun, in a land that was almost covered in sin when the trumpet blew and sucked most people in their forever homes up in the sky. Will I be here? Or one of the guys? It does speak to living a righteous life. One should not live life in doubt. You should have yourself running for glory. How will it play out in my life story? Will I have been saved and stuck up in the clouds or fight for my life down here on the ground? There's a dichotomy there that was explored most interestingly in this poem. Really well done.
Thank you, Laurel. All right, Gene.
Absolutely.
Or should we say Fire Witch?
I've been called worse.
Yes.
Okay. This is called...
You know, there's an image that goes with it.
Yes.
And there's also a song, but you got to take out the witch. It's called Fire Woman by Blue Oyster Cult.
Ah, see that?
I threatened to write a poem called Fire Tip. It got quashed.
I wonder why. Okay. This poem is called Addicted to Reality by Arcana Amore, and I have an audio for this. Pam, I think that this was kind of for you for the having to relate to the comment the other night about, what the heck was it, a guided?
Actually, yes. Yes,
something about an acid trip.
Yes,
this is the poem I was telling you. Remember I was telling you, Rex, that Arcana sent me a SoundCloud after me and Mika were making those comments? Yep, this is that poem.
Yeah.
So this is our guided trip.
There you go. So let me put this on and here goes.
Come and become freed from fluid fire, eternally glowing upon shores of desire. Let it all float away on a swirling sea, past drowning decrees from this insanity. Oblivion now saturates your sinking mind, swallowing the thoughts left far behind. Words shall beckon the ebb of your essence towards a voice that summons your presence. Journeying upon distant drifting dreams, across restful banks by whispering streams, on flickering paths of candlelit infusions, beyond dark delusions of tired illusions. Each breath pulls you nearer this peaceful place, a relaxing embrace sees the infinity of space, swimming through stars that sparkle on high, contentedly burnished into the night sky. Deeper you glide, where dimensions collide, emerging afar on the surge of their tide. Sailing among sunsets, aboard cosmic cruises, ethereal enchantments speak mystical muses. Slowly swaying in a trance to this dance, becoming aware of how deep the expanse, unfurling petals of a blossoming notion, awakening rainbows that ripple emotion. You escaped from the gravity, orbiting calamity, but returned for a fix, addicted to reality. You came, you saw, yet you choose the fire, basking blissfully in the flames of desire.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And Jean, we're going to start with you.
You know, I thought this was a great piece. I really did. First, I wanted to see if I was here or not here, because otherwise somebody will tell me. I think that it was an excellent piece. it was very soothing. When you listen to it, it just soothes your mind and lulls you, I guess is one way to say it, it takes you almost into a meditative state, because you kind of just listen to the sound of his voice and the thoughts, and, you know, you kind of get lost on that. You know, you drift on that that sound, you know, between the music and his voice. It's very, it's really well done, wonderfully penned. You know, I grabbed up a couple of stanzas. Oblivion now saturates your sinking mind, swallowing the thoughts left far behind. Words shall beckon the ebb of your essence towards a voice that summons your presence. Journeying upon distant drifting dreams, across restful banks by whispering streams, on flickering paths of candlelight infusions, beyond dark delusions of tired illusions. That right there kind of takes you to that other place where your mind can just kind of drift and just be free. And I think it was a wonderfully done piece in both written and audio form. So thank you, Arcana, for sharing with us. See, Pam, what you and Mika stirred up here? Just saying. He said, yeah, here's one right. For it.
Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you? You got to unmute it.
Yes, I do have to do that. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. The Lord, which I'm awful sorry. I've got to ask Vicki Palmer on.
Oh, addicted to reality.
Well, that's what I had. For some reason, I doubted it. Let me get back there. I've got a dual screen that's really fouling me. I've got to find the room again. Or it is addicted to reality. Damn it. Now I'm going to go to history. It moves that quickly, does it? There it is. There's a dreamlike quality to this poem that paints a picture that can literally float you away. Like he says, does it all float away on a swirling sea as drowning decrees from this insanity? The stanza that I think best tracks what's going on here is journeying upon distant drifting dreams across restful banks by whispering streams, on flickering paths of candlelit infusions, beyond dark delusions of tired illusions. Brilliant rhyming, brilliant imagery, this dimension that he's invited to visit and does, but doesn't stay. Because, as the last stanza says, you escape from the gravity orbiting calamity, which I think is a delightful description of Earth and reality, as it were. But return for a fix, addicted to reality. You came, you saw, yet you choose the fire, basking blissfully in the flames of desire. It kind of implies that dreamlike world, that dream space, that other dimension, if you will, that restful oblivion that is talked about, does not contain the flames of desire. So yes, he's going to come back to the rough life, perhaps, and choose the fire where he can bask blissfully in the flames of desire. Really a tour de force rhyming and imagery poem that is very impressive.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Laurel. Pam, what about you?
Well, I thought this was fabulous. I thought it was definitely a beautiful trip to take. Great rhyme, wonderful imagery, really a brilliant write on allowing the mind to open up, to soar, to discover the whole idea of tasting that metaphorical flame and knowing that you want more of it. I really like this all the way through, but especially slowly swaying in a trance to this dance, becoming aware of how deep the expanse, unfurling petals of a blossoming notion, awakening rainbows that ripple emotion. Wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, everyone. There's a twofold openness. There's that idea of opening up those doors of perception by literally doing a, say, ayahuasca or LSD and taking that journey forward. But the more important note is actually getting there by, as Gene put it, almost getting to a meditative state which allows you to relax to the point where your mind opens and let you walk through that door on your own, on almost a transcendental note. But the angle that he rolls within this here, oblivion now saturates your thinking mind, swallowing the thoughts that are far behind. Words shall beckon the ebb of your presence towards a voice that summons your presence. Now, it's not just the journey of the mind itself. It's a journey for the voice, the journey into the muse, the idea of what opens up when you let the mind go free in the moment, and there's a voice, the words float, and you can actually drift into that arena and see what's there to toy within the moment, because he does hit on where dimensions collide, slowly swaying in a trance to this dance. There is that note of all of a sudden everything dawns in the moment, and that last stanza is that return to reality where it is the only place where you can actually lay down those words, that voice, so anyone else can see or hear. So I like it on that one, too. So thank you, Arcana.
Absolutely.
All right, okay. James, we're back on you.
Okay, no. Well, Laurent, I'm going to put your piece up next.
All right.
Okay. Here we go. This is Shadows by Buddha. Here we go.
There we go. She says, but I don't see it. Did you put it up?
I did.
Okay.
Yep.
I see it. Yep, I see it. All right. Shadows where I reside. Air was cool. Hours breath divine beneath the late day's sun. Flirtation ran its inevitable course. Our urgent waters began to run. Never was rough so sweet or smooth as the sand between our ankles, rubbing together, aligned response, scratching the itch which rankles. Deep inside, it slowly entangles, holding me, tightening its grip, seeking release, bursting inwards, moving in air, an invisible ship, creating wild white water's crown, flowing forwards, accelerating, an avatar for desire's need, genders equal, emancipating, crashing fury, kaleidoscopic, vivid eyes close, unending rope that ties us together forever, senses burst in multicolored scope, and the places in which you hide are the shadows where I reside. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're starting off with you.
Oh, I think that this was just beautiful. But, you know.
Boy, there was a cartoon note in that. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
I forget which character came with it, though.
No, it's a gorgeous piece that Laurent has written here, and I've always really loved it. So, I'm kind of glad that he read it again tonight. Doesn't seem like, well, it's been a long time, you know. When did you write this, Laurent? Back in 2020, you know. So it's wonderful to have it back out and, you know, hear you read it again. Wonderful, wonderful work. And, yeah, thank you so much.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, when the prompt is Pablo Neruda, it's hard to write badly. It's such great inspiration.
Yeah, there's something about Neruda. I have to say, I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
But you did a great job.
And Pam, what about you?
Oh, I did enjoy this. It is absolutely beautiful. It has a wonderful flow to it. A heartfelt line. I like how it speaks on the idea of how emotions can be so powerful that they can grip the heart and make the mind itself just spin in a frenzy of response. I especially like deep inside it slowly entangles, holding me, tightening its grip, seeking release, bursting inwards, moving in air, an invisible ship. And great use of the word kaleidoscope, crashing fury, kaleidoscopic, vivid eyes closed, unending rope that ties us together. It's that eternal bond, that bond that has strength to it. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice, Pam. I got to stop with those first two stanzas. That was nice lead-in. Air was cool, hours, breath divine. Beneath the late day sun, flotation ran its inevitable course. Our urgent waters began to run. It offers up much, but it doesn't take you further than it needs to. Now that second stanza, never was rough, so sweet or smooth as the sand between our ankles, rubbed together, aligned response, scratch and itch, which rankles. Now I thought that was clever, that stanza. The ankles and rankles note. And scratching the itch. Because you do get that note of saying rough, sweet, smooth, rubbed together. You get a touch of all of it depending on how much everything else is rolled around, oil and a bit touch of water. So that was a great stanza. It offers up a lot, again, without revealing too much. And that the bite at the end. And the places in which you hide are the shadows where I reside. It's a... it's a little dark, but it offers up a note to there's a playful note within that darkness too. Hey, you know what? Darkness offers up many things. Even the shadows we employ across the walls. I like that. Nicely done.
Nice comment. Thank you.
Just so you know, Rex, I picked up Bill Schiller. He's here to listen, so. I'm not sure if he wants
to comment. That's right. I'm just listening.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you wanted to comment, Bill. Okie dokie.
Absolutely. I have some thoughts I could offer.
Sure.
Cool.
Well, a couple of things that jump out. I don't know, you know how many of us can remember maybe sitting on a bench or somewhere next to a girl or a guy that we were sweet on, and that moment where you're trying to sort of inch your hand over a little bit, hoping that you'll touch the other person's hand and that they'll, you know, respond likewise. There's kind of an innocence there, but then there's also that whole anticipation of being able to be close enough to the point where your hands or fingers finally touch. And I can see from these first stanzas that whole moment where two people are sitting on the beach and their ankles are in the sand and so close to one another, and you're wanting, you know, your foot, even if it's just your foot, to touch the other person's feet, and you're digging around in the sand. And that's what I see in second stanza, that sand that's between their ankles, and then it's rubbing together, and then, you know, and the response is aligned, and which is what you hope for when that contact occurs. And, you know, I see that, and there's kind of an innocence, but sensuality in all of that, too, which is just beautiful. And the other thing I think he's done that I think is so masterful, you know, something I see so often when I'm reading are these beautiful depictions that create this wonderful view. In this case, you know, he's describing all of the stuff that's going on, you know, beyond these people, the air, the hours, the sun. But, and all of that's beautiful. But the question I run into often is, and those with these beautiful descriptions that someone can see or feel, without, in the absence of some kind of impact, I always think maybe that stuff just becomes data. It's beautiful to read about and the picture, but ultimately what makes it real is being able to understand how being in that moment or witnessing that, how does it impact somebody? So in this case, in each stanza, he provides insight on not only what's happening outside of them, but you're getting insight on how it's impacting them, which I think is so crucial. Like in the first stanza, he acknowledges that, you know, these waters are beginning to run, which isn't waters at all. It's that feeling, you know, inside two people that are close, and it's kind of, you know, amorous, and that's what it's referring to. And then by the second stanza, you know, that he's describing what that feeling is like when those waters begin to run, and it's never was rough nor sweet nor smooth. But, you know, there's the sand in the ankles and the response to one another is that, and how it scratches this itch that is so hard to contend with. And I think we all get that. I mean, I can relate to that. I haven't had sex in years. So, you know, scratching an itch, which wrinkles.
All right, brother.
You know, that punches a lot of buttons for me. I'm just trying to say all of this resonates with me. And then by the third stanza, you know, he goes in a little further. He's saying, you know, not so we've been sensing that something is building. And by the third stanza, Laurent is saying that as this goes deep inside, it's just entangling, holding, and tightening its grip. I get it, man. I've been there. I'm there right now. I get it. It's just amazing. I love it.
What a great comment. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. Gene, I guess we're coming back to you.
Okay. And the next piece I have is for Pam Ray. It's called Between the Flesh and the Flame. Whenever you're ready, Pam.
All right. Let me just go ahead and click that. And Between the Flesh and the Flame. My bare feet race across wild fields, revealing the nature of love in all its glory and all its mystery, laced with breath to become the veil of a winter sun. This loneliness is a raptor's town. I find myself with a mercenary's hunger, wanting to devour the wayward schemes of Venus, and still embedded in this vessel are fragile bits of hope, waiting to be conceived. I am searching without pretense for a twin flame, hyacinth kisses blowing towards my crumbling foundations. The feminine energy that pulses within me is seeking the horizon of your masculine aura, wanting to connect with the temple that holds the key to my lightning. I pause. The air crackles like fiery beds of dry pine. I am soaring on prophet's wings, pondering thoughts of you. I am counting one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. And from the lines of our palms stretching the canvas of sky comes the voices of thunder declaring divine unity is the understanding of love. Between flesh and flame, and poem.
Great read, man. And Jean, we're going to start with you since this doesn't call for your death or murder inclination.
This is beautiful, Pam. It really, really is. Very well pulled together. You know, this loneliness is a raptor's talon. I find myself with a mercenary's hunger, wanting to devour the wayward things of Venus. And still embedded in this vessel are fragile bits of hope waiting to be conceived. I'm searching without pretense for a twin flame. Oh, this is just, it's just wonderful. I could have kept on reading and been satisfied with, you know, going on with more and more and more. Definitely, you know, a wonderful piece. I love most all of it, you know, well, all of it, you know, it all pulls so nicely together. but I could have gone down here where you started counting, and the lines, you know, towards the end are fabulous. I mean, you really did a wonderful job with this. And congrats on the silver. I see you got a silver on this in from Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone, sorry. Excellent. Excellent job. Well deserved.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, Jean. Thanks. Laurent, what about you?
If this was silver, I've got to wonder, what the hell won gold? Good Lord. This, to me, is a gold palm. Between the Flesh and the Flame is a great title and a marvelous way to end the piece. Jean jumped right on the line that I was going to begin with. This loneliness is a raptor's talon. If you can imagine that talon within you cutting away slowly at your innards, or in your heart or in your soul, that cutting motion, that it stings, it worries at you. And then with delight, you read a stanza like, find myself with a mercenary hunger, wanting to devour the wayward schemes of Venus. That is inspirational. That bam, you're such a good writer. And you did this right in the middle of your move, of getting ready. August 3rd, just a few days ago. I guess you do well under stress and tension. The twin
well,
flame.
Well, actually, this was written on August 3rd, just so you know. But I was still busy because, you know, I was busy packing and stuff. So, yeah, but it was August 3rd.
Well, sure,
but
because,
you
know, you say in one of the following stanzas, the feminine energy that pulses within me is seeking the horizon of your masculine aura. It's also allowing you to be a busy bee in packing boxes and moving. But wanting to connect with the temple that holds the key to my lightning. I pause, the air crackles like fiery beds of dry pine. The imagery is stunning here. And soaring on prophet's wings, pondering thoughts of you. And I love the one Mississippi, two Mississippi piece. Your language is so evocative. And I'll quote the last stanza. Comes the voices of thunder, declaring divine unity, as if that unity was going to be voiced by gods, the voices of thunder, and which is the understanding of love between flesh and flame. That is so sensually intelligent mm-hmm. and articulate that I have to give you a little round of applause on this one. Great piece.
Thank you.
Great comment, Ron. And Bill, how about you?
Yes, thank you. I tell you, this giant word leaps out. At some point in this, as I'm reading it, this word just came to the forefront of my mind, and it was desire. 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 That's what this represents for me. And, you know, not only... And the thing about this desire, the way I'm interpreting what I read, that it's something that's being searched for, and not only being searched for, but it's natural. And because hyacinth kisses are blowing towards this desirous person, my God, Pam, you might need it more than me. Blowing towards the foundations. I don't think your foundations are crumbling at all, but this very natural thing in hyacinth, and the romanticism that hyacinth would impart. It's natural, it's romantic, and it's moving towards what I see as someone who's longing and feeling desire, and that's sort of confirmed in this sense of the feminine energy that pulses within me. You know, so it contradicts what comes in the stanza before, where it talks about my crumbling foundations, but in the next stanza, that despite whatever those foundations are, they may be crumbling, but they're full of energy, feminine energy, and it's pulsing, and it's looking. Are you a stalker? It's pulsing, it's looking. You're a cougar, Pam. And the way that you put that, that energy is pulsing, and where is it pulsing? It's seeking the horizon. And of a masculine aura, which says to me that that aura that you're seeking is somewhere out there in the distance. And, you know, that, but it's being sought for this connection with this feminine energy and all its pulsing. I just find this very sexual. I don't know if I'm looking at this right, but that's what I'm getting, desire and longing out of it, and it's beautiful, Pam, as you are, Pam.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
Great comments, everybody. I think they covered quite everything. I do got to hit on one thing. Laced with breath to become the veil of a winter sun. This loneliness is a raptor's talent. And then you go into the mercenary hunger. So the dichotomy between the two thoughts is, all right, my dungeon's been a little empty of late. I got to go on a hunt. And then you roll down to that one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. I took that on a couple of levels. On the one hand, there's that note to football, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, hike. And then there's the angle of a countdown to hide and seek, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, up to 10. And then the thought of offering it up as a touch of humor. And then maybe just for the hell of it, meaning all three of those things that won't kind of roll into this piece. You got to have a bit of the humor. There's got to be the hide and seek. And there's got to be that delivery in the moment right after the hut hits from the third Mississippi.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome.
All right,
Jane. Oh, I haven't even done one. You know, I've got Firewitch out, but we're coming back to you, Jane.
Yeah. Okay, dokie. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put out is called The Seasons of You and I by me, by my eyes. And I don't normally worry about putting anything out there, but I decided to do it tonight. I remember winter's bitter cold, frostbitten hearts chilled and numb, neither seeking nor receiving the embrace of love's warmth, quiet and withdrawn, both dormant and detached. I remember the gentle breezes of spring, as sunshine and warm rains nurtured innocent new buds, buds that slowly opened to one another, capturing each morning's dew and toasting the wonders of new beginnings. I remember the heat of summer raising us up tall and strong as we reach for sun's brightest rays, celebrating the heat of our passions, warming the softest petals of our desires. I see the beauty of autumn's visual grace, colors of all we have become, buoyed by the wonders of hearts entwined, now basking in the love that has wintered over, sprouted anew, and grown strong. End poem.
A great read, and thank you for letting you, Jean, out of the bag. I'm going to double play that. See, not often you bring something out of the woodwork to read, so you let Eugene out. All right, Laurence, why don't we start with you?
Well, occasionally Jean does demonstrate exactly how good a poet that she is, Seasons of You and I. I remember winter's bitter cold, frostbitten hearts chilled and numb, neither seeking nor receiving the embrace of love's warmth, quiet and withdrawn, both dormant and detached. He takes winter, that season when all is quiet and either hibernating or seeking shelter, and, you know, quiet and withdrawn, dormant and detached. And in many ways, you know, hearts chilled and numb. It's exactly a representation of winter. And as she moves into spring, the gentle breezes of spring, as sunshine and warm rains nurtured innocent new buds, you know, she takes the essence of spring, the opening of new life. And, of course, love is included in that. And then follows it with the heat of summer, when love really blossoms. And now the heat of passions are felt, warming the softest petals of our desire, and uses the beauty of autumn, the colors of all that we have become, buoyed by the wonders of hearts entwined, to represent that beauty, that stunning display of color, that is that from things that wintered successfully and sprouted anew and grew strong. It really is a poem of love and passion and desire. And it has a structure to it, which I think is very successful for the four seasons, the centering and the short lines and taller stanzas work really well. Bravo, Jean, bravo.
Thanks.
Hey, you're right. Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is wonderful. I really like how the first three stanzas are "I remember" and the last one is "I see," giving a sense of continuancy. I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors, a beautiful nostalgic and romantic feeling. I like how it shows us the whole idea of a relationship that goes through these different growing seasons and grows all the stronger because of it. I have to say that I really like this all the way through, but as I said the other night, I'm an autumn person, so it's definitely the autumn stanza, the beauty of autumn's visual grace, colors of all we have become together, buoyed by the wonders of art. I mean, that those are just amazing lines. Wonderful, right, Jean, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. And Bill, how about you?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Pam. I think I'm an autumn person too, but I'm looking for a spring fling. And I think that what's really cool is, and it is this extended metaphor. And for me, I think someone, I'll just piggyback on what someone said. It is not about the seasons at all. It's about the seasons of a relationship. And, mm-hmm. and it's really cool how each season represents a stage of life. And the first thought I was thinking of is when, one of the worst things about getting old is remembering all the stupid things you did when you were young, the things you thought, the stupid things you said. And, so, in this case, it starts off as winter and this sense of detachment. And then spring comes along. And as it paints the spring season, it refers to an innocence. And I think, we can kind of relate to that, a period of being detached. And then something happens, romantically, and it's, we start to open up a little to whoever that person or thing is, as the stanza, the spring stanza, talks about innocent buds opening, which is the opening of our hearts and minds, to this connectivity of another. So that's what I'm seeing, the movement of a relationship or a person in that relationship, going from this cold detachment of winter into this innocent opening, and maybe it's not so opening. I mean, maybe it's not so innocent. That's what I meant to say. Or maybe I'm just foisting my decadence on that. And then, of course, in the summer stanza, you know, we see how that innocent opening of buds of spring is now moving to the fires of passions and the softest petals of our desires. I get the feeling is, but I mean, that's what I see. I see the summer now, things are starting to heat up quite literally as that season would be. And then, by the autumn, it's funny, if you've been in a relationship with somebody for a really long time, by the time the autumn rolls around, all of the things that were important to you in winter and spring, the sex, how someone looks, their touch, their words, all of the things that begin in a relationship, it's only after a long time that we can finally look and realize the person we're with. It's not about their physicality or something on the surface. It's the bond. And how all of those colors combine, as that stanza kind of insinuates. And so it's about the binds of a relationship for me, and I just think it's so good, and as an extended metaphor of using each season to represent this different stage of life and the life of the bond between two people. It's really beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Thank you, Bill, very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. And we're at the back end of things, Jean.
Okay.
You want to say your leftovers? Never mind.
Yes. Yes, I have carryovers for next Friday. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I want to thank you all for the great comments, by the way. 12:30, Once Upon a Time at 12:30 with, the Duke of St. Paul and Pam, because Pam she's a busy girl. And tonight's show is which topic, Pam? I was going to say
Sherry Love.
Yeah, she is.
You beat me quick.
I'm telling you, she's good at that. Anyway, thank you, Rex, for co-hosting with me. Thank you, Laurent. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Pam, for calling in and hanging with us. It's always great to have you guys hang out. And what a great night of poetry. So I'll be putting up the topic board in a few minutes with the carryovers. I apologize for anyone who gets carried over to next week, but, you know, we all have our turn in that barrel. And we'll talk soon. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Rex. Have a great night.
Good night. Good night, gang.
Thank you. Thank you for everything you do. Good night.
Thanks, Bill. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Laurent.